This is Comics Therapy, episode 57. No reviews, just analysis. Up this week, three comics from September 3rd, 2014. Nailbiter number 5, Headspace number 4, and Southern Bastards number 4. Just as a reminder, we never do reviews, but we do talk a lot, so there may be spoilers ahead.
I'm sitting in the railway station, got a ticket for my destination. On a tour of one night stands, my suitcase and guitar in hand, and every stop is neatly planned for a poet and a one-man band. Homeward bound, I wish I was homeward bound.
Welcome to Comics Therapy. Neither Aaron nor I are licensed therapists, so don't take anything we say seriously. This week's theme is Small Town, Big Terror. There's a special kind of monster and justice that inhabits a fictional insular community, whether it be in the Pacific Northwest, the Deep South, or inside the brain of a killer. Yeah, you heard me right. This is Comics Kids, where murder and mayhem in Small Town USA can take on a whole new level. Serial bullies, serial monsters, serial killers, and do not get me started on the daddy issues.
If you've been listening to the show for a while, you know that in between comic segments, we usually feature your nerd confessions, celebrating what we love and what we snark about comics. If you listened to the show last week, you know that we're going to be switching that up. We'll still keep the line open. You can call, Skype, or email your confessions to us, and the general prompt will be about the current week's comics. The details are on the website, comicstherapy.com. We never said catharsis isn't still cool.
Every day's an endless stream of cigarettes and magazines.
Cigarettes and magazines.
And each town looks the same to me, the movies and the factories. And every stranger's face I see reminds me that I long to be.
In between shows, you can find me on Twitter, at Andrea Schock, and Aaron, at Aaron Myers. The show account is at Comics Therapy. Aaron, how's your holiday weekend?
The same as any other weekend. Ooh, actually, I went to a comic store out of town.
What? No.
Yep. Yeah, I drove to the city over and went to a comic store.
City. That's adorable.
It is a city.
Really?
Corvallis?
Eugene?
Eugene's a city.
Okay.
110,000 people's a city.
Okay, okay.
It's a small city.
What did you get in Corvallis?
Comics.
Oh, right. Anything specifically, though? Like, what was the draw? Why drive to the next town over?
Because some stores need to kind of replenish, you know? It's sort of like fields.
When you buy all the comics in one store, you have to go to another one?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, so I go this... I mean, Corvallis is far enough away to where it's not, like, a thing you can do all the time.
Hmm.
You know, it's 50 minutes to that store.
Okay.
From the house here. So, you know, that's, you know, basically 2 hours of driving back and forth.
Just for comics?
Well, but it's been, like, a year since I went there.
Okay.
It's a kind of store where they have... Last time I was there... It's the same sort of situation where it's kind of a mess, you know, and you have to dig through things.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how it was last year and the other times I'd been in there. It's definitely a lot better than it was the last time I was there. So I could actually get to all, like, the back issue boxes.
Hmm.
There's still stuff piled on them, but it's way easier. Like, I didn't have to, like, you know, unearth them or anything.
So I don't know how you do that without having an inventory. Like, doesn't it drive you a little bit bananas just... going without a plan? Like, that seems, correct me if I'm wrong, but, like, really counter to everything else about you.
Well, I went there specifically to look for books I could resell.
Oh, so you weren't looking for your collection, so it didn't necessarily matter.
I mean, there's definitely things I bought that just go in the personal collection that I just came across, but I didn't go there specifically looking for those.
You were speculating.
Well, I didn't speculate. It's all stuff I know I can sell, because I've already sold it before.
Speculating as a, you know, like flipping.
Sure.
Right, okay.
Yeah, I mean, we had a little bit of time on Saturday, and so I could take, you know, 3 hours off from family stuff. And so drove there, went through all the boxes, pulled out like 18 comics. That it's just how it always is. If you know the trends of eBay, most stores aren't going to be up on that as well. You know, so you'll find things that are sell for a store for $2 that you can then sell for 30 or 40 on eBay.
And you know the trends of eBay.
I do.
I feel like you've gotten more and more into this over the past 6 months or so.
Well, yeah, it pays for my weekly comics.
I'm not judging. I'm observing.
Yeah. I mean, I spend, you know, $120 to $175 a week on new comic books. And the way to pay for that is to buy old comic books that people want that, you know, maybe I already have in my collection that I can resell on eBay.
Okay.
Yeah. So, whatever. It's been fun.
America.
I guess. I mean, it's not something you make a living at, but it's paying for my other comic books.
Right. But there you go. That was your holiday weekend.
Yeah, it's
no
fun.
No barbecue, just comics.
Oh, we aren't. Yeah, I don't know if we're a barbecue family.
Why not? You can put chicken on a barbecue.
I mean, you can. I just don't find it fun.
Oh, right. And we have been talking recently about how much you don't like things that are fun.
I don't. I like things that I like that are fun.
You like to be by yourself.
Going to comic book stores. Mm-hmm.
Read comics by yourself. Go buy comics by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Continue to be by yourself.
I'd do a podcast by myself if I could.
Yeah. I wonder if anybody would listen to that.
Probably not.
Huh. Oh, well. You can dream, though.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you can't do everything by yourself.
Well, I celebrated my holiday weekend by showing Avi the first episode of Star Wars. And by first episode, which one do I actually mean?
Episode 4.
Of course.
Just yes.
Making it clear to anybody who had any doubts in me or my, you know, Star Wars savviness.
Oh, do you really want to get into that?
No, it's not a fucking competition. However, it's not something that I know nothing about, so let me have this.
That's
not
fine.
A complete Star Wars neophyte.
Right, but you did ask me something pretty basic to any kind of Star Wars nerd last night.
No, what I asked you about was based on my lack of knowledge of the re-releases and why it was such a big deal. It's not that I didn't understand the sequence of events that occurred during that scene or what it represents for the character. I just didn't understand the meme.
I don't know the distinction in this case.
Are you going to tell the folks at home what you're making fun of me about, or should we just move on to the next thing?
Well, I mean, any true Star Wars nerd would be able to know that you didn't understand what Han shot first means.
But I didn't understand it because I didn't know why it was a thing.
Right, that's what I mean.
But that's not because I haven't seen the movie umpteen times.
Sure.
It's because I hadn't seen the re-release. And so, like, why were we even having the conversation? Like, why was it up for debate?
But because any kind of real Star Wars nerd would have had the Laserdisc release, the SVHS release, the DVD release, the Blu-ray release.
Again, I will say, it's not a competition.
No, but it's, you know, everything's a competition. We've
With
already
you.
Established that.
Right. For the record, I also have seen Jedi like 100 gazillion more times than I've seen Episode 4.
Really?
Yeah. Yep, Jedi was my jam. Totally.
Jedi is the middle one for me. Empire's
After
the best.
Empire's
the best.
Yeah. Well, I would watch Jedi and then Empire. Jedi and Empire. I really didn't watch Star Wars very often, like, in repeat as a kid. Mostly, I don't know. It's interesting because I found watching it last night that it's slow to build, but...
Sure, yeah.
I've also seen other things recently that I felt that way about.
Yeah, I think our attention spans maybe have been reduced over the years, too.
Yes, mine certainly has.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm excited to watch Jedi, because I probably haven't seen that in 5 years, whereas it had been probably 15 since I had watched Episode 4.
Okay, so, that's fun.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And the only thing I regret is that Avi had gotten his hands on some of the kids' novelizations, and so he had much more of an awareness of some of the bigger events. Now, for him, that was good, because he had like a natural comfort with the universe.
Mm-hmm.
But it meant that, like, some of the reveals were less of a reveal for him.
Oh, okay.
So, that was...
That's a trade-off.
Yeah, it's totally a trade-off. But he did well, and it was fun.
What else?
That's it, I think. I had a couple other things, but it doesn't really matter.
Yeah, well, I mean, in the end, the only thing that matters is comic books.
Right.
That's how the saying goes, right?
Sure.
Well, do you want to talk about some?
Sure.
Okay.
But all my words come back to me in shades of mediocrity, like emptiness and harmony. I need someone to comfort me. Homeward bound. I wish I was homeward bound. Home where my thoughts escape and home where my music's playing.
Our first book this week is Nailbiter No. 5, written by Joshua Williamson with art by Mike Henderson. It's colored by Adam Gazowski and lettered by John J. Hill. Nailbiter is published by Image Comics.
Okay, our first small town is Buckaroo, Oregon, birthplace of 16 of the most notorious serial killers in history. Chances are everyone in town is related to a killer or at the very least knows someone who is related to a killer. It's probably a lovely place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there. And on second thought, visiting hasn't gone so well for Finch or his missing friend Carol. We've had a couple murders, some displaced corpses, arson, mutilation, so nope. Consider this the first entry in my Why Small Towns Are Scary textbook.
But you can't say that about all small towns.
Yes, I can.
All small towns are scary.
In my experience, both fictional and non-fictional small towns kind of make me anxious.
Why? Because you grew up in the city?
I don't know if that is the only reason. It is the only set of reference points I have. But like my mom, for example, grew up in a really small town in Ohio. And much of what I know about her childhood and the experiences that then I had there when I visited when I was a kid... not awesome. Kind of all of the stereotypes that you associate with a very insular town. I don't know. I am willing to admit that it is a set of unfair stereotypes that I am projecting onto every small town ever. But I feel like small towns produce those stereotypes for real.
I think that's a ignorant preconception.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yes,
I think what it comes down to is small towns have less people and sure, there's less anonymity, so people know the secrets of other people more than you would in an urban setting where people come and go and the flow of humanity is far more malleable.
Fair enough, but does that also mean that for whatever reason, because there's less anonymity, we know more about how much people suck?
Sure. And I mean, in a way, like, the internet age has changed that quite a bit. I think we know how much everyone sucks now.
Okay.
But prior to that, I mean, it goes both ways. You have community far more than you do in a big city.
Not necessarily. You can have a very strong sense of community in a neighborhood in an urban area.
Sure, but then it's essentially the same sort of thing. Where if you have enclaves within cities, they're essentially small towns unto themselves.
They are not. They have a much greater chance of having external exposure and an embracing of diversity, of the full meaning of that word. Opinions and people and ideals and perspectives.
No, now you're making the distinction of geographically or racially isolated groups of people are somehow flawed because of those circumstances.
Am I? Is that what I'm saying? I'm not saying flawed.
You're making a judgment call on it.
I am definitely making a judgment call. And I prefaced it by saying that it was based on my limited experience.
Yeah, that's fine. I mean, most of your ignorant statements are based on your limited experience.
Right back at you, kiddo.
It's almost like you grew up in a small town.
I'm provincial, not ignorant.
Okay.
You know, like Belle from Beauty and the Beast.
Sure, sure. I'm particularly defensive of this subject, having grown up in a town of maybe 250 people.
Gosh, I'm not even remotely surprised that we're not going to see eye to eye about any of this week.
Well, we can get back to the book since before we start arguing about this again.
Okay, let's get back to the book.
I think those stereotypes and the exploration of why certain patterns emerge in small populations, mm-hmm. say like a group of serial killers in this regard, but it's based upon a lot of those sort of, I don't know if it's more like correlation instead of causation.
Okay.
In my opinion.
Okay.
You know, where fine, you might have, so in this case, you know, you have 16 serial killers that come from one small town. In the real world, a statistical anomaly, not because of some sort of natural occurrence that causes it.
Yeah, but then where's the story?
Well, I'm just saying this is a story. It's not. I'm talking about like
okay.
in regard, you know, in comparison to real life.
Sure.
I love the concept, and I think it also explores that same sort of thing of why did this happen in this town, or why do we see all this sort of thing. And if anything, it all goes back to, like, why do those patterns emerge? Because when you have people in sort of tribal situations, you know, which is kind of what you set up when you have a small town that might be geographically isolated.
Tell me more about this use of the word tribal.
It's, you know, tribal being a small group of people.
Okay.
So, not in so much like the Native American sense, but only in such that, this, you know, however, throughout history, where you have groups of people who band together, the other as an instinctual survival, you know, mechanism is not to be trusted.
So when you're talking about the isolation, not about the Lord of the Flies-like behavior.
It depends what happens. I mean, you look at like a Stanford Prison Experiment. You set up a certain sort of parameters for a group of people, and then a pattern will emerge based on that, because, you know, it kind of goes back to like last week's discussion. We only have so many kind of variables in our outcomes.
Then in that case, why isn't every small town just a bastion of depravity and disgust?
Well, because that's one set of paths. It doesn't always have to go down that way.
Oh, okay. So we don't always end up with Lord of the Flies. It's just that when we do, that's good storytelling. Just not a town that I want to actually live
in. Yeah, well, right, especially for horror or something like that. I mean, you can have a Mayberry situation if you want.
Hmm. That's it's also a lot not as fun.
Yeah, obviously. I mean, you can, it goes back to the accountability through small populations. You know, it's easier to hide in a large urban setting because people aren't tied to each other. They don't have the same sort of sense of, it's sort of like a base level survival, you know, even though you don't need your neighbors, whatever. And, you know, in a modern kind of the modern world that we live in to bring you food or fix your wagon or something like that, you know, like we would have needed 100 years ago. There's still the same sort of stuff that goes on. You know, if you have a town of 200 people, you know, if there's a child molester in your ranks, he's probably not going to get away with it.
This is so fascinating because basically you're spinning all of my objections around as positives.
Well, yeah. I'm the ray of sunshine on this show.
You're also speaking from your experiences, which are very different from mine, but are like protective of this small town mentality as something that is like a safety net for people, whereas I see it as a barrier to outside experiences.
Do you think that still applies?
I don't know. That's actually a really good question, because certainly I know more people who have moved out of small towns to get away from that barrier, or get over it, if you will, than I do mm-hmm. who still live in them, obviously. But absolutely. I think that some of it is generational, and I think some of it is geographical. But,
okay.
Yeah, I think that is definitely, there is no doubt in my mind that the kind of dangerous, willful ignorance is more prevalent in small towns than in larger urban areas, just because the scale of exposure to people who are different from you is greater in the latter type of community.
So you're talking about cultural ignorance.
Yeah, sure.
Cultural and racial ignorance.
Maybe I'm not saying that.
Not intellectual or like scientific ignorance.
Yeah, okay. Whoa. Yeah. I am not in any way saying that everybody in a small town is stupid. Mm-hmm. That's, no. But I'm saying that when you are only in a town of 200 people, like, that's math that you're not going to be exposed to the range of other types of people that you would be if you were in a town of 200,000 or 2 million.
Sure.
That's all.
Yeah, but what's the advantage in that?
It's going to have an impact on who you are as a person and how you see the world.
Yeah, for better or for worse. I mean, it could go either way, is my argument. I don't think being exposed to more people is necessarily a good thing.
Okay, tell me why.
I'm going to have
to cut all of this, by the way. It has nothing to do with the comic, but I am so fascinated with why you think that having exposure to other experiences would be a good thing.
Well, that's such a general statement. And don't cut this. Leave it in. Often our discussions have nothing to do with the comic book. We'll get to it. I mean, it's such a ridiculous statement. That's saying, like, you need to breathe all the air, different types of air in the world. It's like, okay, why? You know, it's...
Let me turn it around. Why not? Okay.
Well, exactly. Like, I'm just saying, it's neither a positive nor a negative. It just depends on the experience and the situation. So you can have a town of 200 people full of very intellectual, cultural, you know, well-read, whatever, people from all walks of life. Or you could have, you know, 200 inbred Appalachians. And even so, it doesn't mean the quality of life is bad.
I'm not making any kind of judgment about the quality of life.
You're making a distinction, though, between, you're saying that people who are physically and culturally isolated with themselves are less than those who grow up in a much larger human population.
I'm not saying less than. I'm saying that they will have a reduced set of experiences and perspectives to draw from personally, because the actual, like, physical number of people that they interact with will be less than. That's where the less than part comes in. You can be a person growing up in a small town of 200 people in the middle of nowhere, and your only access point for the rest of the world is books or television or online or whatever. And you can learn a tremendous amount about the way that the world works. But it's not the same as actually going out and living in it. So that, like, that is a reality that is, like, you cannot convince me that is an equal way of experiencing life.
I can, because you're putting a weight on the other. You're saying that those who grow up in a large urban environment, who get exposed to multiple, whatever, experiences with different cultures, are better than those who don't.
I'm not saying better at all.
You are, though.
I'm saying different. I'm saying that they are, like, very, very different perspectives on people and the way that they interact.
Sure, but I'm saying that maybe it's better to have a small interaction experience, at least in formative years, than it is to grow up in a large urban environment where it's not.
Okay, so in this place right here, we have, like, our personal lives, very, very different. Our sets of experiences in our formative years, very, very different. And we're not going to see eye to eye on this.
Sure.
I'm okay with that.
Oh, thank you. That's very open-minded of you.
Do you want to talk about the comic?
Sure,
do you
want
to argue about small towns?
No, we can do both.
Okay. Well, that's exciting.
Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, the comic in this case is pointing... I don't know if it is or not. It's just set in a small town, and this is the situation of the small town. And from a storytelling, like, setting, it's much easier to set your cast of characters in a small town than it is in a city.
You're making a judgment about cities versus small towns now.
No, in terms of literary, setting literary boundaries, yes, I am.
You can call me on that. That's fine. I was not expecting that this was the way that, like, today's conversation was going to go.
No.
Are you feeling extra protective and defensive because you are also from a small town where everybody kills each other?
I don't know what the murder history is. Oh, there was a house. Yes, there was a house next to the school that I never looked it up. It was always the story that like it was a like in the 1800s, a you know husband losing his mind and killed everyone in the house, and then himself. And the house was always for sale. Like, no one that I remember lived there.
Yeah.
But I think every small town has that, like, murder house.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think every neighborhood has that murder house. We had a murder house, like, around the corner from my elementary school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, that's a good part of any kind of, like, gold rush type town. There's always something like that.
Right.
Cemeteries are creepier in small towns.
Wait, now who's being super judgmental?
No, I'm talking from experience.
So was I.
I mean, you know, like a big city cemetery is boring. Bunch of, you know, plots laid out as far as the eyes can see. Small, little, like, sleepy cemetery. You go there, maybe your cousin on a moonlit night. Your second cousins, you know. Nobody's going to judge you. It's fine.
Okay. You want to talk about what are we talking about for real now?
We can try.
I don't know if we can. Like, I really am not sure that we're going to be able to get back on track.
Yeah, let's go to our next book, and we'll talk about Nailbiter as it progresses some more.
Okay.
I feel like we talked about it.
I don't think we did at all.
You know, we don't do reviews.
Sorry, Josh. We think you're great, but we're going to just fight today, so...
This is Andrea's fault.
As always.
All right, well, let's see what our second book brings up.
Well, tonight I sing my songs again. I play the game and I'll pretend. Oh. But all my words come back to me in shades of mediocrity, like emptiness in harmony. Oh, I need someone to comfort me. Homeward bound, I wish I was home.
Our second book this week is Headspace Number 4, drawn by Eric Zawatsky and Sebastian Priss, colored by Zawatsky and Marissa Louise, lettered by Zawatsky, and written by Ryan K. Lindsay. Headspace is published by Monkey Brain Comics.
This small town is called Carpenter Cove. Again, lovely to visit, but I wouldn't want to die there. Carpenter Cove is a construct of a town in Max's head. Max is a killer, because of course he is. But the people populating Carpenter Cove, some of them at least, are real people placed Inception style in Max's head to keep him from killing again and to figure out what makes him tick. People like Shane, Carpenter Cove's sheriff, who volunteered. Shane is quite literally in there with all of Max's personal demons and memories. Carpenter Cove is going through a bit of a transition, if you will, the opposite of a gentrification. Monsters and terrible fears, it's a living nightmare for Shane in the small town inside Max's headspace.
Yeah, sounds a lot like where I grew up.
Right. With one-eyed monsters and, like, tentacle creatures and...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bartenders.
Sure. I mean, you know, if you were to tell it.
If I was to tell what? What it's like to
the, live the story of my upbringing, yeah.
Right.
I guess we could actually talk about this book. I like the sci-fi aspect of the psyche being like its own little community, which I guess in a lot of ways it really is.
Yeah. It's exactly the same kind of insular, restricted feeling that actual small towns. You know, where everybody knows one another and nobody trusts one another.
That's ridiculous.
Small towns are terrible. Have I mentioned that?
Well, it's because you hate your brain.
Oh.
I think now we're really
getting into it. Just made it really fucking meta, man.
Yeah, well, I think we're getting to the heart of this.
Oh. I hate my brain, and therefore I hate small towns.
Yes. The small town of your brain, which you loathe, you are projecting now onto me. And all of us who grew up in small communities, small, tight-knit, loving communities.
I can just cut out the middleman and just, like, I just loathe you.
Well, yeah, but I am just the receiving of the hate for your own town in your brain. I lost the thread on that one, but you know what I mean.
Okay, so I want to make a distinction between each of the small towns that we're ostensibly trying to talk about this week. In Buckaroo, Oregon, there's this distrust, legitimately, because of the history of the town, but also because of the commercialization of the history of the town. And so people are aware of and kind of ashamed of what's going on there. And then in Carpenter Cove, there's a lack of awareness of what's happening until, like, very, very recently. And mm-hmm. So there are a lot of comments about how they have a shared history of no history. And Shane talks about, like, how he doesn't necessarily know everybody, and yet it's important that they are all on the same page together as a community because they don't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that tension in both places is kind of dealt with in very different ways. And obviously, there are gajillions of other differences in the two towns, like in between Nailbiter and Headspace. The paranormal and like id quality in Headspace notwithstanding. But I do think that the kind of small town mentality, the positive part of that that you are describing, is handled in different ways in those two books.
Well, one, the like Headspace is this sort of journey of discovery of how somebody becomes who they are by kind of picking apart their psyche, you know, and it's just in a setting of a small town. But really, it's sort of it's peeling away the layers to get to the core of a person.
But it does speak to what you were saying about how important that, like, the formative years in a small town would be. Like, why else would you choose to place Max's memories and sort of the exploration of his brain in that environment if it wasn't an important thing for his identity?
Well, it also gives the world some boundaries, too.
Well, right, but, like, that's where you and I differ, is that, like, you can have boundaries in an urban setting as well.
You can. I mean, I think they become more arbitrary, where you actually have physical boundaries when it comes to, you know, like a town.
Okay.
You know, it. I think people are very good at perceiving, you know, whether they're, and I guess they're all arbitrary in some ways, but you know when you're leaving one town and entering, you know, whatever, either the expanse of the wilderness or another town. In a city, I don't know if it's quite so defined, but you definitely have what you were talking about before, like neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
When we lived in San Diego, like San Diego is a city, but it's really 50 different towns in one large urban area.
Mm-hmm.
With very distinct kind of geographical boundaries that separated them.
Like hills or water,
sure.
Or whatever.
Sure, yeah, or freeway or whatever, yeah. Right. And the communities are very tight, you know, distinctly defined by where those boundaries begin and end.
Mm-hmm. Pittsburgh is much more like that than, I think, other cities that I have lived or visited.
Yeah, like San Francisco never felt that way to me.
Not the sprawly part of the Bay Area. Mm-hmm. It just kind of extends outward.
Yeah, and there's, I mean, you could say even like South Bay, like, okay, there's Oakland and there's Berkeley and et cetera, et cetera. But I never felt like there was, like, you are leaving one and entering another.
Right.
So, like, clearly defined.
Mm-hmm.
Even, like, where my parents grew up, like, visiting, and it was this way, like, where they grew up was definitely there were lines or there were spaces between the towns. But when we would go back to New Jersey and visit, like, my grandparents, you know, they would say, oh, we're leaving this town, we're entering this one. It was just a sign. You know, there was there's no difference.
Mm-hmm. Well, so in Carpenter Cove, there's the physical separation from, like, and I guess you don't realize it at the beginning because you don't really know that the whole thing is a construct. But the water is the separation there. Like, floating off into the sunset, the horizon is where, like, the reality of the town ceases to exist.
Yeah.
And so there's this separation, this kind of like the isolation of an island. Mm-hmm. And in Buckaroo, presumably it's the woods.
It definitely appears to be that way. Like, the woods surrounding the town are the, you know, the where it starts to fray at the edges.
So, do you think that a physical boundary like that is, like, part of the mythology of a small town, then?
I think in a lot of literary and maybe, you know, TV and movie, that is a very powerful kind of way of defining things. Even, you know, I only watched the first few episodes, and I read, like, half the book. But the Stephen King book, Under the Dome.
Right.
It really reminds me of that. Like, there's a literal, like, dome that comes over a town to the, you know, to the border of the town. Mm-hmm. You know, it couldn't have a more clear sort of definition of here is one, here, and there's the other. There's definitely that where I grew up, and it was just isolated because of, it's just a small town in the mountains, you know.
And so the effort to actually get outside of that comfort zone, whether it's pleasant and delightful while you're there or, you know, full of serial killers and or monsters, it takes a lot of effort to put that distance between you and the town.
Yeah, well, even take the metaphor further, like into the mindscape, you know, to leave the town of your mind takes some effort too. So it's a...
Why stay when it's not good?
Well, it's for, you mean if it's not a good town?
Yeah, and a little, I mean, bit that's the familiar into the third book, but like why stay in a place like Buckaroo? Why try to make things work in Carpenter Cove? Like, what is the draw for an individual who is aware of the fact that there's something else out there?
Because leaving to the unknown is a big hurdle for most people. Especially after a certain point in life, I think. You, like, even if you don't like it, you know it. And the familiar is a very powerful glue.
Even if it's disgusting familiar.
Sure, you might hate it, but it's yours.
Ugh, okay.
It's like, I can talk trash about Camptonville, California. You can't talk trash about it.
I wouldn't. I'll just silently judge you.
Well, you can, city folk. Yep. Well, let's talk about our next book. I think it goes right into that.
Yeah.
I wish I was on the boat. Oh, when my thoughts escaping home, when my music's playing home. When my love lies waiting silently for me.
Our final book this week is Southern Bastards No. 4, written by Jason Aaron and drawn and colored by Jason Latour. Jared K. Fletcher did the letters. Southern Bastards is published by Image Comics.
This is the final issue in the first arc, Here Was a Man, that centered around Earl Tubbs returning to his hometown in Craw County, Alabama after 40 years. As the recap in this issue states, it hasn't gone well. He's found corruption and despair at a magnitude he can't just walk away from like he did so many years ago. People have gotten hurt. People have died. If small towns in the South make you think of barbecue and sweet tea, maybe some football, well, Craw County does offer that much. But if you're looking for another example of why small towns are scary, it offers that too.
Yeah.
This is what I think of if I am going to embrace the stereotype of small town scary ignorant.
But this is an example of a small town being influenced by one megalomaniac.
Sure.
You know, this is what happens to a small group of people, and this can happen to a large group of people just as easily.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the manipulation of humans by influential and powerful people who don't have good intentions. And it's the hero's journey of the man who returns, the man who left the familiar, and returns back to it, and finds that the corruption has taken place in his absence.
And for some reason, despite removing himself by like crossing that barrier, running away from where he came from, it becomes very important to right some of the wrongs that have occurred since he left. Like, he's yelling at the people of the town, like, what? Why is this not a problem for you? Why are you not standing up for this? What? I'm going to be here every day from here on out until the rest of you wake up and see how fucked up this is.
Yep. And in a way, we already talked about spoilers, but I think we should talk about this last issue of the arc, specifically about what happens, because one man's not going to change it.
No, I think that he's dead. So he's definitely not going to be the one to change it. But his legacy can.
Well, but the whole story is about legacy. His dad couldn't change it. He can't change it.
So maybe one woman can.
She wasn't born there, though.
Is that a requirement?
She doesn't have the glue holding her there.
But again, is that a requirement for making change? Like, what's...
No, I just think it's an interesting storytelling device. Like, I'm very intrigued to see where this goes now. And if that's the case, if she's the one who is the one who enacts change, it's that passing of legacy. And I guess it's sort of that... it's the discussion of, like... I'll always feel like Camptonville is my home. Because I was born there. I was born on my parents' land. You know, that's where I come from. Would my children ever feel that way? Like, you know, would they, even if they moved there, would that ever feel like home for them? Probably not.
Right.
I don't know if you can pass that glue on. Like, you know, so I guess to me, the next part of the story that I'm curious about is legacy something so, like, it's this, that glue, is it ingrained? Is it just something that's slapped on you when you're born and that's the anchor?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it passed down generationally? You know, will something tie her back to that town if she comes to avenge and seek justice?
I wonder, though, if that gives her an advantage.
Sure, maybe.
If the awareness of the legacy, but the lack of baggage means that some of the things that I find scary about small towns would be separate from her approach.
Maybe. Depends. We don't know what her upbringing was.
Sure.
We're assuming she grew up in the city.
But in all three of these books, we have outsiders infiltrating the town. And in all, potentially, I mean, like, yeah, Earl was from there, but, like, he's at the point at which we meet him in the first issue of Southern Bastards, he is not of the town any longer.
Well, I think we discovered, though, as much as he struggled his whole life to not be from the town or of the town, he finds he can be nothing but of the town.
Right, but, like, time has passed, okay? He's from the town, but he is no longer, like, if you had asked him 3 pages before the first issue started, if that was his home, like, that's not part of his identity anymore.
I don't know. I think that's wrong. I think it is. Otherwise, he would have left.
Listen, it's not what he self-identifies as anymore. He's escaped it. It's not what he wants. That doesn't mean that it's not part of his DNA. It doesn't mean that it's not something that, in going back, he realizes he cannot separate himself from. But he has spent his entire life running from it. And so he sure as hell is not going to stand up and say, before he goes back, that it's that, like, that's who he is.
He might not say it.
We
find out, though, he could say whatever he wants, that he, you know, he can't wait to get out of there. He can't wait to never come back to it. He finds that you can leave the town, but you never leave the town. And that's why he can't leave.
And you don't find that fucking scary about small towns?
No, I think I think it's a very powerful sort of exploration of human psyche, especially when it comes to growing up in insular communities. And I think insular becomes a derogatory term, but it's just sort of this magnification of being tied to a place.
Okay.
So it doesn't mean it's always true in real life. It's just an exploration of that. And I can identify with a lot of aspects of it.
And I think that's great. I can't. I also think that's fine, too.
Well, I feel sorry for you.
No, for real. Like, drop the act for a second. I think that it's just two different ways of reconciling, like, our growing experiences, right? Like,
yeah, I guess. I think there is a value in being somewhat anchored to an area.
But you can't just create that anchor if you haven't had it.
Sure.
So you have that pull back to your small town upbringing. That doesn't mean that you're living there now. It doesn't even mean that you want to live there now. But it is part of who you are because it was a very unique experience. Whereas I don't necessarily consider my upbringing geographically or like in the suburban and then urban environment that I was in to be that remarkable.
Yeah, but that's, I mean, it's fine either way. I do feel kind of sorry for you in a certain way, though.
Okay.
I do. I mean, it's, you know, it's this isn't the end of the world.
It's
but
not.
I think there is sort of, there's just a something from being from a place.
Can I make a really out-of-the-box analogy that is maybe deliberately extreme, but I think that when you don't grow up with any kind of religious faith, it is not, for many people, it is not part of your adult identity. And trying to create it as an adult is more difficult. Not impossible. Many mm-hmm. people have done it. But is more difficult than growing up with it and having that community touchstone for your, like, faith identity. In the same way,
sure.
If you grow up in a small town and that is part of your identity, like it's part of you as you grow up. If you as an adult didn't grow up with it, but you move to a small town and you think it's kind of awesome, like that works for a lot of people. But it wouldn't work for me. It would not be something that I could embrace as an adult.
Yeah, that's fine. I understand the where you're going with that mode of thinking. And in a lot of ways, yes. I mean, the geographical religion of being born somewhere becomes just a part of your psychological faith for the rest of your life.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you, you know, renounce the religion or not.
And I'm a big advocate for Pittsburgh as a city and for what is going on there. I think that there's a lot of great stuff happening, and I spent years there on purpose, but I don't maybe subscribe to the like religious fanaticism of Pittsburgh as like the end all be all, because it's not.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that that's what you're describing about your small town in Northern California, because you're not there either. You know, you've obviously taken parts of that and have moved on, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just like super conflicted about all of this shit as usual. And that's why all three of these books have like a lot of emotional resonance for me in very different ways.
Yeah. This is not a solvable or even a problem. It is just a good way of trying to puzzle out and understand the way the human mind works.
Mm hmm. Obviously, Southern Bastards makes me the most upset.
Mm-hmm. It has the most, I guess, emotion, like, singular emotional gravitas to it.
Yeah. Well, and it's also, unfortunately, the one rooted in reality the most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay.
Right? Like, there's not a supernatural component to it. There's not even, like, serial killer, like, outside of the norm kind of component to it. It's just really disgusting human behavior and, like, what we're capable of doing to one another, but on a fairly, unfortunately, typical scale.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I mean when I say scary. I don't think that there's any community that's immune to that. And that's maybe the saddest part. It's just that the small town aspect makes it feel so much more isolating to me. Makes it seem as if the spectators of the town like actually can't escape it, and that like really bums me out. That physical barrier preventing them from just, like, walking a block over to the next neighborhood or, like, what have you in a more urban environment. It's, like, oppression on a level that I have a hard time dealing with.
I will not deny you your emotional distress.
But it's a pretty stunning story. So, you know, I can handle my emotional distress if it is good comics.
It is, and it was. And you know what? We don't have an interview this week.
We don't, but that was a really bad comic segue.
Well, that's what I'm good at.
You are. You are.
I blame my small town upbringing. We didn't have need for, you know, segues and transitions and conversation. We all just kind of knew what we were saying to each other.
You did. Were you, like, telepathic as a community?
I'm not allowed to talk about that. Well, I think we can let the good people go back to their homes, back to their loved ones, back to their community centers.
Right. And I will prep for the barrage of hatred from the internet for my ignorance.
Yep. And it is well-deserved, as always.
Awesome.
Well, thanks. Thanks, everyone, for listening to another episode of Comics Therapy. Don't forget to pre-order your comics at your local shop and subscribe to them digitally. Show notes and other details are on our site, as always, comicstherapy.com. We'll see you next week.
Almost heaven, West Virginia, Blue Ridge Mountains, Shenandoah River. Life is old there, older than the trees, young.